Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN. Anita, we survived Thanksgiving weekend.
Yes, we did. And I believe all of our friends through the interwebs and through the podcast-iverse have also survived Thanksgiving. So, congratulations. Take a moment, pat yourself upon the back. Might not have been pretty, might have been hard. I know some of you are hiding in closets and bedrooms crying with or without a drink.
You might have ugly cried in the car, and that's okay.
Yeah, good job for getting through it.
You did
Go
it.
ahead.
And you might have had a great day. Whatever you had, we're glad for you that you have now made it to this point.
Yes. How was your Thanksgiving, Mel?
Good. I almost beat my Zelda game.
Okay. The other day, Mel, I was waiting for a load of laundry to get done, and my kids were playing on the Wii, just like the games that come with the Wii. And one of them was this fishing game, and I was like trying to beat my high score. And I sat down there forever after the laundry was done, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm becoming Mel.
And tell me why that is a negative
It's
thing.
not.
You're
It's not,
welcome.
but I want you to know
Okay.
I caught a lot of fish.
I'm surprised that this is the first time hearing of it.
That's true. It was last night, though.
Okay. Okay, question for you, because here's what I've noticed with video game playing. As I've been in trauma and kind of get my head stuck, when I play the video games, it gives me something to focus on. Then kind of, it's like, imagine a suction cup noise, like it gets my brain out of the vortex. Did that do it for you?
Maybe kind of, because I was really, really grumpy yesterday. I feel like yesterday, which was Saturday for all of you, I felt like I was having the hangover from Thanksgiving, the relentless nature of this and how it never goes away. So, yeah, maybe it did help in a weird way.
Well, also, let's talk about your meds
Oh.
because you had a
Oh
realization
my
this week.
gosh, you guys. So, remember last week when my son split his head open, I had to take him to the emergency room. When he did that, I happened to be putting together my little old lady pill box, you know, because I've reached that age where I was putting all my vitamins into my little pill box. And
Dang, I've had one since I was 18.
well,
I'm an old,
you're an old
I'm a
lady
grandma.
forever. But anyway, he hit his head. We go to the emergency room. I stop in the middle of my sorting of pills. Come home, don't think anything of it. So I go and tell a week. And I mean, there's a bunch of big horse vitamins in there. And the antidepressant I take is like the size of a small, tiny thing, pill. So I didn't notice it wasn't in there because that was the last one that I had to divvy up. So I went for a whole week without taking it. And I was like, holy crap. Oops. And it explained some things for me, because when I'm in the griefy ugh, I'm not necessarily depressed like what people would think of it as, you know, textbook. I get mean. I get grumpy and mean and really irritable. And I was looking back on the week and I was like, yep. And when you suddenly stop taking those, you go into withdrawal, and it can mess with a lot of weird things that are not mood related. So I was having like heart palpitations and weird things like that. So FYI, PSA.
I like that you bring this up too. And I know that you did this on your Instagram, but you just referenced how a lot of people, for them, depression exhibits moody, listless, very sad. For me, it's more like I have no will to do anything. Mm-hmm. Just do not care. And I'm pretty low. But for you, it's not like that. And that can be deceiving. And so I think it's important for those who maybe they exhibit signs like you do, like irritability, wanting to
murder people,
like the neighbor's children that ask you for things. She texted me so many times, you guys, do I need to cut that out?
No, it was okay. Funny. And like I said, it explained a lot of things. And it's true. I didn't take those pills for a long time because in my mind, I was like, I'm not laying in bed every day. I'm not crying every day. You know, I'm not depressed. And then my sister-in-law was like, when I'm having these, you know, she has suffered some loss. She's like, I get irritable. And I was like, what? And it's really, really helped me as a parent, because I am still angry sometimes, but it's definitely not as bad. So I started taking them as soon as I realized. And I don't know how long it takes for them to like get back into your system. So that might also be why I'm feeling just out of sorts and kind of bleh.
Plus Thanksgiving. Yeah. When mine, if I miss the drugs that I'm on, the antidepressant, it's Effexor. And Effexor goes out of your system really quickly. So your withdrawal symptoms are really quick. So if you don't take it at the same time every single day, you definitely notice. And I feel like these weird electric pulses and can't see very good. And I remember being super alarmed, and I told like a nurse practitioner one time, and I was like, I'm alarmed. Like, this is very weird. And she's like, I think it's a good thing because it reminds you that you didn't take it. and I noticed my feelings have like oscillated back and forth on those two things, because it's like, well, a lot of people don't want to be on antidepressants and would like to get off of them. But for those of us that need it for a length of time, maybe that's a good reminder. So, and I've forgotten so many times to put it in my pill box or to take it. I have widow brain, and I think I've taken it that morning, but I don't think I have. And it reminds me, let me tell you, because I can't really drive. So, so PSA for those on antidepressants or who might be thinking about it.
Yeah.
It can exhibit in many ways.
Yes. I'm back on the wagon, and that's good.
good.
Can we just chat really quickly about how I attended your family pie night as your wife? It was great, you guys. There was a sing-along. There was a song about a shining sickle that was stuck in my head for 3 hours, and I don't know any of the words. And so it was like, la da 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 da. Da, 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 da.
You guys, it was epic. I'm just really glad, Anita, that now you know what Wendy, my cousin, and I have dealt with our entire lives. You have witnessed it. Yeah, they were like, hey, we have a great idea. How about a jam session? And I was like, that means that I have to play stuff. So I was like, do you guys know what you want to sing? No. So it ended up working out, but there were a lot of oldie and goodie tunes from like Tin Pan Alley, I would say.
I would say oldie and oldie tunes. Yeah. I didn't know any of those songs.
Dear Hearts and Gentle People. That was one song.
One was Blueberry Hill. No, Mockingbird Hill.
Mockingbird Hill, not Fats Domino.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
We did Happy Birthday because my other cousins that were there, they're like, we never grew up singing any songs. We only sang Happy Birthday. So we sang Happy Birthday in a bunch of different styles. And I was like, we have to have somebody's name. And so my friend that was there, he's like, he Googled. He's like, whose birthdays are today? Oh, it was Ted Bundy's birthday.
So we sang Happy Birthday to Ted Bundy. I was not clear what was happening at that point in time. I'm like, I don't know why we're singing Happy Birthday, but okay.
That's what happened. So those that came that have not been part of the family music thing before were very delighted, and they actually had a great time. So
also, your dad did a little dance. I don't know if I can call it a dance. I'm not sure what that was. A movement? It was like between a sway with a clap and a sway with a point. I don't know, but I took a videotape of it because I found delight in it.
If any of you want to see my dad, Jemima, doing this, you can go to Anita's Instagram because she made a GIF about it. Our parents are hilarious. And yeah, that was our weekend. And so thanks for coming, Anita. You brought a delicious chocolate pie. You survived your Thanksgiving. And now we're here.
Yes, we are. Hey, you guys, if you want to keep hearing this podcast, go check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/WWDN. Making a podcast costs money. Weird. And it takes like a lot of time. A lot of time.
A lot.
So if you want to help us keep going, then check out the Patreon. And one of the bonuses of the Patreon is what, Mel?
You get a shout out in episode at the tier called Widow, Bestie, and Up. And we are about to do that shout out right now.
All right. For our first dead husband, who is our secret dead husband, we have a special musical number today. And it goes like this.
Swing the shiny widow. Did you say shiny widow?
Is it not shiny?
It's shining. Anyway, I don't know what's worse. Next, we have Constance Dahlbeck, who might just be doing a sleep album soon.
David Kelly.
Don Satterwhite.
Gail Paxton.
Ivan the Meisner.
With the Penguins.
Cat, with an actual cat that has its own laptop.
Krista Waite.
Sam Finlayson.
Amy Hartman Martell.
Amy Sapp.
Ashley Hahn.
Christina Shiflett.
Danielle Katterberg.
Not a Debbie Downer.
Dennis Brazzo.
Jenny Taylor.
Jennifer Brown.
Jennifer E. Hassel, whose episode is today.
Jenny Wang.
Kathy Murray.
Spooky. Kirsten. Scary. Stromberg.
Laura Bradbury.
Lauren Old.
Welcome! Leslie Webb.
Marie Hoffman. Come dance with my children.
Missy Schubert.
Rachel Barbosa.
Whoop, 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 whoop. Sarah Morris.
Sylvia the Shining
Sickle
Shore.
I knew you were going to do it. She was so happy.
Good.
Taylor Snyder.
Hello. Karen Cornejo.
Vicky Spitt on a mission to take down the government.
Anna Tracy.
Christina Scambato.
Christine Anderson.
Cindy Radon.
Mindy Holmgren.
Don Barber.
Debbie Fells.
Diana Becker.
Emily Thornton. Did you make it? Did we do it?
Emily Toledo.
Aaron Posick.
Have you figured out if we can get into Australia yet? Thank you. Gabe Lozano.
Ian Cini.
Ileana Bell Ruiz.
Jackie, who made delicious Thanksgiving. Thanks, Jackie.
Jane, the Shining Sickle.
Jenny Barrow.
Ms. Jocelyn Milo.
Hi, Jocelyn. Joy Kirsch, the Fancy Lady.
Julie Stevenson.
Karina Jacobo.
Katie Radcliffe.
Kara Scara.
Lindsay Konopka. Your last name is so fun.
I know. Lori Farrington.
Marjorie Lewis.
Mary McGowan.
Megan Montague. And the Capulets.
Peter Rukavina, who likes Darn Tough Socks. I love Darn Tough Socks. Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
Becky, Ziba. It's Ziba, right? Not Ziba?
Hi, Becky. Sarah Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah. Shannon Helm.
Stacey Saywert.
Sunshine Haven.
Tammy Schwartz.
Tara Wallace.
Val the Packer.
And swing the shining sickle, Wendy. She knows the pain.
She does. I wanted to say turkey leg Wendy, but it's okay. Thank you to all of you people. We love that you guys are so awesome.
We appreciate all of you patrons.
Patrons.
And your patron and your support. Thank you so much. If you would like to join our Patreon, remember it's patreon.com/WWDN. But if that is not your cup of tea, you are welcome to buy us a taco at
buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow. And if you don't want to do either of those things, just give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people to find the podcast when they need to find the podcast.
Yes, our mission is to help all of the widows in need. So if you know someone in need, please tell people about it or write a review or both. And it doesn't cost anything.
Join the Widow Wives Club.
It's on Facebook.
It's a private group. You guys, I am part of a bunch of Facebook groups for widows and widowers. And in one of them, somebody was asking why a particular person had gotten on the group and, you know, told them this sad, 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 sad story and how they needed money. And then this lady had contacted that person and then their profile got deleted and they were blocked. And she was like, why would somebody do that? And it made me so sad because somebody else had to be like, there are scammers in this group and that person was scamming you. And I was like, that doesn't happen in the Widow Wives Club because we
are jerks.
Yes, we make people prove that they belong to be there. And that is exactly why. Off my soapbox. Thank you. Good day.
We know it's annoying and it's for everybody's own good. And do not send money to people that you do not know.
The end. Okay.
Even us, unless you want. But we're real people.
Shall we get to the episode, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
We're two Thanksgiving turkey widows, and we're just trying to figure out and help you guys figure out too.
Widow, we
do
now.
Now.
This episode is brought to you by the Meisner Family Foundation in memory of Elizabeth Meisner.
Mel, guess what?
What, Anita?
We have a guest today.
Oh, really? I'm yes. So excited. Who is this guest?
Well, she's a mystery guest, but I'll let you in on the secret. Her name is Jennifer Hassel. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Anita. Hi, Mel.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Jennifer, tell us where you're recording from.
I am recording live from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
How many buggies did you pass today on the road?
Actually, today, not, but oftentimes several. I live within 2 miles of a covered bridge, and then I'm out in the farmlands, and I can take my bike, and often I'll see several or those cute little kids in the fields helping with their parents.
Pennsylvania is so beautiful.
It is so beautiful here.
And that's Amish country for those of you who are wondering what in the world we're talking about. So a little enclave. Jennifer, did you grow up in that area or where are you originally from?
I grew up in this vicinity, not far from here, but we moved here when I married my husband, Mark.
So you're a Pennsylvanian from birth?
I am. I was born outside Philadelphia.
Do you sing Pennsylvania 6-5000?
I don't sing that. I don't. I have basically two notes, sort of.
What is that?
The good news about that song is that you shout it. It's an old big band tune. And whenever they get to the break, the band goes, Pennsylvania 6-5000.
Oh, yeah.
So way old, like
Yes.
Benny Goodman days.
Yes, I do remember that.
So we've gone Amish to Benny Goodman. So let's hear about your husband that you just alluded to. Tell us about him.
Well, I have been a widow 14 years. I was married to a man named Mark, and being a widow 14 years means I have had a lot of practice.
Do you think there's hope for us? I mean...
Yes, absolutely.
We're only 4 and 3 years out.
Yes.
Okay. 14 years is such a long time.
You would think so. I wish when I was 3 years out, 4 years out, I could have met an older widow. That's what I really wanted. Someone who could tell me, you know what, you're going to be okay. So I hope to be that for other younger widows. I met my husband, Mark, when we each became part of a group that eventually became the Philadelphia Triathlon Club. And as luck would have it, my bike broke our very first training ride. You know, I show up with, I think I knew casually one or two people, and I showed up. We went for a ride outside the city. We're 10 or 15 miles outside the city. I'm dying because I've never ridden this far in my life. And my bike chain broke. And by this time, I'm so far back in the pack, there's nobody around me. So I'm sitting on the side of the road wondering, what am I going to do? What do I do now? And the pack came back, and the guy who became my husband and another guy in the club took turns pushing me home. They rode next to me with their hand on the small of my back and pushed me back to Philadelphia. I was mortified.
How many miles was that?
Oh, at least 10. You know, like you can, when it's level, you can coast, but oh, it was so embarrassing. But one thing led to another. We fell in love and got married. 3 kids later, we're still in love, living the dream. I was a lawyer, and he was a doctor. Like, how good is that? What we didn't know is our life was really good. It just wasn't going to last. Mark was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer on his 45th birthday, his actual birthday. He had had a complete physical 11 months before, blood work and everything, nothing. You know, he seemingly perfectly healthy, an endurance athlete, no risk factors, no family history. Only 4% survived the diagnosis he had because it was stage 4. We did aggressive treatment at Johns Hopkins, and that bought him another 19 months. When he died, our kids were 10, 14, and 16. And I said I was newly old. So I don't remember a whole lot about what happened right after he died. It feels like when you have cancer, everybody surrounds you. They want to help. They want to be there for you. But then he dies, and it feels as though everyone exhales and says, now we can get back to our own lives, because they've been so invested in helping. And it might not be that it was that way. It's just, that's the way you felt. Because now after all the trauma of the cancer, now you have the trauma of the grief. And I think what we all ask ourselves is, how do you go on when you lose the person you thought you couldn't live without? And that's what we all have to figure out.
What brought him to seek medical care that led to the diagnosis?
He had been feeling like a stomach dyspepsia, like stomach acid, for the past 6 or 7 months. And we tossed it, you know, we pushed it off to the fact that he was building a new office and things were stressful. And he didn't, that was the only symptom that he had. We were supposed to go on a hiking trip to celebrate his birthday, and we were to leave in 3 weeks, and he was just feeling really crappy. And unbeknownst to me, and I just, this kills me that I didn't notice, he had lost like 15 pounds in 2 weeks, and you're so busy and you see someone, I didn't notice. I'm, you know, you're trying to keep the kids, trying to keep, hold the house together. So he said, I feel so rotten. And I said, look, you're a doctor, call a friend, go see somebody, right? And what was amazing that I remember is I was with one of my daughters on a mother-daughter trip in Philadelphia. And he was to see the doctor on Friday. I was not supposed to come back till Friday night. But Thursday afternoon, I got the worst sort of anxiety that I've ever had in my life that said, get home. And I thought, well, just try to blow it off because I had these plans with my daughter. She was 12. and it just wouldn't go away. So I finally decided, you know, would it be okay, Emily, if we just cut this a little short and went home early? And she was like, yeah, sure. So we got home that night and everything seemed okay. But because I was home, I went with him to the doctor's appointment when we found out that he had cancer. He had gone for an ultrasound, and the ultrasound showed all the masses in his liver.
Wow. How did you break that to your kids?
No, I don't even. When we walked into the doctor's office, we'd gotten the ultrasound, and I guess they called the results over. We walk into the doctor's office, and they shuffle you into a little conference room, and you don't think anything of it. You're just, you know, so you sit there, and the doctor walks in with his assistant, and you don't, it's like, did time stop? He just looks, and he looks at Mark, their colleagues. I'm so sorry, you have cancer and it's spread and we don't know where the primary is. And the doctors just, you know, my husband and this other guy just locked eyes and they both started to cry. Anyway, after he died, what I remember is that the kids would go to school and I would sit there and wonder, what am I going to do with myself? I pitched almost all his clothes immediately. Some people find the clothes and the husband's effects very comforting, but I did not. I found it horrible, a horrible reminder that he would never put those on again. So I pitched so much of his stuff so fast, just get it out of my sight so I can pretend that this didn't happen. But then this amazing thing was that in our garage was a scooter we had bought for him when he got sick. It was a Yamaha Vino scooter. And as I'm thinking and getting rid of everything, including his car, I looked at that scooter and I just, there was something about it. And I looked at it and I thought, well, what if I got a motorcycle license and I learned to ride this thing? It had just enough snot that you needed a motorcycle license to take it on the street.
So this isn't like a Razor scooter. This is more like a Vespa scooter.
Yes, it's okay. Like a Vespa. Yes.
Because in my brain, I was like, we got him a Razor scooter when he got sick. And I'm like, okay, but that's just because I have little kids and that's where my brain is.
But it's not a bullet bike, full on.
No, it's like, okay. It's a Vespa. And it was so cute. And while, you know, when he was first diagnosed and we were able to do things together, we'd go riding like for an afternoon. We just, the two of us would sit on that and take it up to a state park. But after he died, it sat there for a good 5 or 6 months. And I just couldn't get rid of it. It was so cute. And then I got this idea that, well, what if I got a motorcycle license? The cool thing is in Pennsylvania, the state Department of Transportation will teach you how to ride a motorcycle. They do everything. You take the little, you know, paper test, but then if you sign up to take this course and show up, they provide the motorcycles, the instructors, the helmets, everything. And so I thought, well, you know, my husband was really adventurous. Why don't I try to do something adventurous? And so I went to the class. It was 3 weekends, Saturday, Sunday, all day long. And I went from the first day show up, I did not even know how to turn a motorcycle on. And this wasn't a Vespa scooter. This was a real motorcycle. And by the end of the third weekend, we were doing figure eights and downshifting and, you know, changing gears and doing the whole thing. And I got my license. That day, when the instructor walked over to our group standing there and he said, you all passed and two of you got perfect scores. And I got a perfect score.
That's amazing.
I know. Win for the widow. It was amazing. It was amazing, Mel. But here was something else. That day was the first day since Mark had been diagnosed. So in 2 years, it was the first day that I was genuinely happy. And so I thought, you know what? This is something I can take this and move forward with it. I am going to do an adventure every single year in my husband's honor so I can become more like him. I want to challenge myself and do scary things. And so that's what I've done. And every year, I didn't necessarily tell people why I was doing it, but I did an adventure. I've now done 14 adventures.
I just want to know, after you became a biker babe, did you go get like a giant tattoo on your chest?
or leather? Like, did you get a jacket with like your own insignia on it?
Yeah. I mean, how far did you go down the biker world?
You have to remember I'm riding a Vespa, like scooter.
Okay.
But here's something really cool. When I was out on the road on my little scooter, and there's a, do you either of you ride motorcycles?
I'm kind of scared of them.
I tried once and I ran into a fence. Jason rode motorcycles. He loved to do it, but I banned him from riding motorcycles.
Because you thought he would die. Ha ha. Joke's on you.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, when you pass another motorcycle in the other direction, everybody, you'd sort of have this hand signal where you drop your fingers. Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm cool. And they, so I would pass like Harley Davidson and they'd give me the, hey, you're cool. While I'm on my little Vespa. No, that was fun.
I love that you had decided to do an adventure every year. I would love to hear about some of the adventures that you've done. What did you do next?
Well, after that, I did Women's Tri Fitness, which is a national competition. It's in Las Vegas. And I wore a bikini on stage.
That's enough to make anybody squirm.
You are doing all the scary things. You got them all out of the way the first few years.
That was an out-of-body experience. But you know what? I learned a lot because each time I've done an adventure, I've met a new group of people. And the people who do fitness training seriously and prepare and get their bodies to look a certain way so they can compete on stage, they're amazing. Their dedication, their perseverance and discipline. So I was very impressed. And after that, I did a 100-mile bike ride around Lake Tahoe in a single day. America's Most Beautiful Bike Ride is what it's called. I went to nursing school. I did that. I went to trapeze school too.
Okay, what? Okay. I have questions. Stop. I got to go back to the bodybuilding thing. Would you call it bodybuilding? What did you call it?
Women's Tri Fitness is an amazing multi-dimensional competition that has different components. There is an obstacle course, like a marine style obstacle course. There are different, like there's a shuttle race. There's a, how many can you do, like 60% of your body weight, body presses? What's that called?
A bench press? Forget.
Bench press, yes. Sorry. Yes. So you choose, when you sign up to do Tri Fitness, you choose which events you want to go in. And then there's this grace and physique, which is the bikini part.
When you were preparing for this, would you prepare for the entire year?
I prepared for 6 months. So I've always been a kind of a gym rat, and I was doing weight training at the gym, and I'm one of the coaches who was training a group of other women who were preparing for the competition approached and said, would you be interested in training for this, you know, taking your training to the next level? And I thought, I don't know. I mean, you're wearing a very little bit of cloth to cover yourself, and you're wearing high heels and you have to walk. And then I thought, you know what? What am I going to regret more? Not doing this, sitting on the rocking chair and saying, why didn't you try? Or doing it with the potentially being embarrassed? Who's going to know? Who cares? And so, yeah, go for it. That was sort of the, hey, this fits the criteria, something scary.
I'm wondering, when you decided to do these adventures, did you do it really consciously? Like, I'm going to do this for the purpose of healing and honoring my husband? Or did you just kind of fall into the different adventures?
The idea was always that I wanted to become more like him. Okay. At his funeral, the pastor said, Mark was someone who lived fully. And then he went on and he described six other attributes of Mark. But that idea that he had lived fully resonated with me. And I thought, am I just going to sit here and cry for the rest of my life? Or am I going to try to go out there and do things and also show my children that I can be adventurous too? I'm not just a mom who cooks meals and does laundry and drives them around. I want to have my own life, my own interests. And so, yes, they were very deliberate to honor him.
How did you go about deciding each of the adventures? Did they just kind of fall into your lap during the time when you were trying to figure them out? Or was there some rhyme or reason to which ones you selected?
That's a great question. Sometimes it just fell into my lap. Sometimes I would start thinking, well, what can I try next? The trapeze school just fell into my lap. I was in Santa Barbara and Santa Monica, and walking on the pier with a friend, and we rounded the corner and there's the New York School of Trapeze. They had a branch office. No, they had a site out on the Santa Monica Pier. And as I'm walking by, I'm looking at this and thinking, oh my gosh, that looks amazing. That really looks fun. You remember when you were a kid and you went to the circus? Well, they look like normal people. So I just sat there and watched for a while. And then I saw this little, you know, board on the side, trapeze school, sign up here. You know, and I thought,
Why not?
When you did trapeze school, was it just when you were there visiting or did you go back home?
It was a one day thing. So some of my adventures have been a one day thing and some were things that I've trained for or got involved with that took, like nursing school took 4 years. But other things like trapeze school, that was a once and done. You do it for the afternoon. Oh my gosh, I'm terrified of heights.
So I feel like your body competition would help prepare you for trapeze school because you'd have very strong upper body strength, which would be my problem for trapezing.
You know what's amazing is I thought, how am I going to hold on to that thing? Because you think you are wearing a harness, so it's safety conscious. But one thing I didn't realize is once you get a hold of the trapeze, you have a death grip on it. Okay. But the other is that when you're swinging backwards, the centrifugal force helps you like get your legs up over the bar. And you end up actually at one point you're swinging by your knees. It was fun. It was terrifying.
So you've done motorcycling. You've done trapeze school, the tri fitness competition, nursing school. What are some other things that you've done?
I biked from Pittsburgh to Cumberland, Maryland. That was like a 3-day bicycle trip. I did hella hiking.
Oh, yeah. Cool. That's like our neck of the woods. We have that stuff here. So you got on a helicopter and they dropped you off?
Yes, in the Canadian Rockies.
Yes.
My last adventure was heli skiing, also in the Canadian Rockies.
Helicopter skiing is scary.
It was terrifying.
And normal skiing, downhill skiing, takes some time to get to learn so that you have good technique. Were you a skier before? Did you train for this?
I was a mediocre skier and it was terrifying. I did a beginner training. You know, they had an instructor. They knew that we were all had never done this before, but I was the least common denominator. I was awful, but I survived and had an amazing experience. One thing I want to say is that this year I decided to begin telling the stories of the adventures I've done, what I learned from each one, who I met, and how other widows could also learn to take action to remember their husbands, and that it's healing to do this. Because I don't know about you, but when I looked for ways to remember Mark, all I found were things to buy.
Thanks, Amazon.
Yeah, I don't want to buy something. And yeah, I understand people have their bears made and of their ties or their t-shirts or the quilts. And And there's a certain comfort in that, but I wanted to remember him in a way that was more alive. Shortly before he died, he said, "I just don't want people to forget me." And that broke my heart. I thought, babe, no one's going to forget you, but I'm going to make sure of it.
I know, now we're learning about him and we have never met him, and it's 14 years later, so he's living on.
He was amazing.
I think that we've all been guilty of grief buying to try and soothe and try and fill some of the hole we feel within ourselves, is just to fill it with stuff. $1,000 worth of luggage from Anita.
But it looks great. It's Cotopaxi.
And I use it all the time, so I'm not sad about that. But I do think it's cool to fill that void with memories and new life, as opposed to just objects that really, I don't know about you guys, but most of the time when you buy something, it's like, ooh, feel better, doesn't do anything for you. You know, it's like a temporary little serotonin boost, and then it is gone. So,
yes. But the idea, I think, and I call these legacy actions, I think anybody can figure out what to do to remember their husband, because there was something about each of our, and it's not just a husband, whoever, you lose someone that you love, there was something about them that you miss or remember or was a hallmark of who they were. And if you think about it, say they were generous, you can find your own way to pass that forward. If they were a helper, you can find a way to be a helper. I met a woman whose son died tragically in his 30s, and she gives these special hugs because her son loved to, you know, he was just good at hugs. So she will hug you, and then she takes her knuckles and goes up and down your spine. And she said, "Here's a Drew hug in memory of her son." And I think anybody can find a way to take their loved one's qualities, make them their own, and carry it forward.
I love that you're mentioning meeting other people that have experienced loss in this journey. As you've gone through the different adventures and you've met people of the different communities, have you come across many widows that are trying to rebuild their life as well?
I think in other ways, not necessarily through the adventures I've done, but this summer I did a bike tour, and it was amazing that four of the people, including me, had a grief experience within the last year, whether it was a spouse or a son or a sister, somebody that they were really close to, and how it affects them, and to talk about it with someone else who knows, yes, I get it.
Right after Jason died, most of you guys will know that I put everything that I had into the race that I wanted to qualify for. And I wonder if this was a similar experience for you, but at that point in time, I felt like that was the only thing that I was truly alive for. Everything else just felt like I was checking boxes and just existing. And that was the only thing that made me excited or made me feel like any sort of happiness or joy or purpose was for that. And when I was trying to decide if that was feasible for me, a lot of people told me that I should wait because, I mean, I was in complete and utter chaos. My family's in chaos. We don't know what's going on. And people were like, "You should probably, you know, this is probably not the year to do it." And obviously I didn't listen to them. And I'm so glad that I didn't, because, you know, it was really, it's what got me through for that first year, I would say.
In order to find a way to live, we have to move forward for ourselves. And one way you did that was by being physically active. I remember when I was training for Tri Fitness, maybe you had this experience, that physical pain helped take away some of the, or it was an outlet for the emotional pain.
Yes. And I always felt like just that physical activity untangled a lot of the thoughts that I had swirling around in my mind. It just gave me a way to straighten those out somehow. Even though it's not like they made sense afterwards, I just felt better afterwards, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's been interesting this past year, before Scott died, I was going to get him a bike for Christmas because we had discussed mountain biking. Well, then he dies and I didn't get the bike. And my depression got so bad in the spring and I was texting Anita and I'm just like, I need something to get out of the house. Like, I wish that I could do what Anita does, but I'm physically not there. And I'm like, it would take me a long time to train to get to where she is and all of her biking and everything. But she told me about e-bikes, and that's a way that got me out of the basement and doing something new with a person that was like my quote safe person. Cause as a lot of us widows know, our circles diminish who we feel like we can be ourselves with and who is a safe person. And so what I noticed is it gave me something to look forward to. But not only that, is I was able to follow her. I knew that Anita knew the way. So, like, I didn't have to be responsible for, like, trailblazing.
She thought so, I knew the way.
Well, so anyway, far we've not gotten lost. But there are so many parallels with trails and biking that there are with life, with stories of life. But also what I noticed is that my attention, because it was so new for me, and if I didn't pay attention to the trail, I would fall over and break something. It did what it needed to do in my brain to get it unstuck from thinking the thoughts that were kind of keeping me trapped in my depression. And that's not to say that, oh, I went biking one time and I'm fine. It's like I would have a high for a day or two and then it would go back down. And I was like, Anita, I don't understand this. Like, I feel okay for 2 days, but I'm so used to feeling bad and like managing my life with this like new normal or whatever. She's like, no, that's the point. Like, you keep riding and it helps you. And so that was just as a testament to trying new adventures like you're talking about. That's been so helpful for me to just get me out and not only helping me physically, but it helped me with a community, I guess. Like, Anita and I are kind of already in our own community, but it helped me to be able to learn something from somebody that knew more and also helped me, you know, with my body and my mind. So there are ways, even if you're not in top physical condition, you can still do some things that are considered adventures.
Yes. I mean, for some people, you know, going on a zip line is really adventurous. And for other people, that's not such a big deal. But isn't it fun to try something new and to say, you know what, I want my life to be a full life. I want it to have things that you can sit around and tell a story. And it's kind of nice to have bragging rights to say, yeah, or I did that, or, you know, at least I tried it. And not everything turns out real well. I mean, the heliskiing in some ways was a bit of a disaster, but I did it. I tried it.
Are you going to come to Utah and ski? You could put that on your list because that's where we live. And guess what? Guess what Anita is trying for her first adventure that she's never done? Sport-wise this year. Tell her, Anita, tell her.
I promised Mel that I would go skiing with her. I avoid skiing, or I have historically since I was in high school, because I like my ACLs too much. That's what I say. But Mel, I have committed to go with Mel because she came mountain biking with me. And so I'm going to go skiing with her.
And also when Scott died, I stopped skiing because I had a car accident. So I physically couldn't. So this will be my first year back post-death to wear the skis that I bought right before he died. And now Anita's going to go with me. But one thing that I noticed that, and it actually helped me to be okay with saying yes to going skiing for sure this season, is when Anita and I were mountain biking, I realized that it gave me the same benefits as skiing did. Mm-hmm. Where you're like, you have to pay attention to the trail. And so there's such a, yeah, I just am amazed at the benefits of trying new things and being active and learning about the communities for those new things too.
Yes.
What's the most surprising factor of any of the communities that you've been a part of that you didn't know before?
Because I was trying new things, I got to meet new people. For instance, I didn't have a background in science, but when I went to nursing school and I met a whole group of people that became really dear friends, I love that. You have this thing in common with them because you're studying something or you're doing something together. And I would never have met them otherwise. I think as you pointed out, when you become a widow, a lot of the people that you might have hung out with before are no longer, they're part of a, you knew them as couples, but not everybody translates into your friend. And so your social life is different. And so you need to make new friends. And by trying new things, you have more of an opportunity to make new friends.
I think that it's a common experience to feel like your confidence takes a hit because your cheerleader is gone. The person who would cheer you on, no matter if it was a dumb idea or not, is gone. And now you're left to be your own cheerleader. And I always feel when I accomplish a new task, even if it's a silly task, like, I don't know, I figured out how to change the timer on the lights for the garage. When you finish that task, you feel like this extra, like, you know, boost of, yes, I'm so cool.
What a win.
I got this. Yes. And I mean, before your husband was dead, you'd be like, oh, whatever, you know, but now because your confidence, you've kind of been squashed down a little bit by the loss of your cheerleader. Every new thing you learn, every new skill that you develop takes on bigger meaning and is more meaningful than it was before. Have you found that to be the case in your adventures and learning of new things?
Absolutely. I think you really hit an important benefit that I hadn't articulated, but you just did. And I think that was one of the thrills of getting the motorcycle license. It wasn't just I learned a new skill. I actually had this little card that said, you know, with your name on it, that you're now competent in that, or you graduate, or whatever the thing is, that you complete a task that, yeah, is new and different. Isn't that great?
Yes. And it means so much. And sometimes you feel silly when you want to do a fist pump in the air for whatever you've learned, but it's not silly. It's cool.
You graduated from nursing school. Are you working as a nurse currently?
I retired. I did that for almost 10 years, I think. And last spring, I decided with COVID, I retired and decided to begin writing. So that's what I've been doing since then. And I'm working through a group called Hope Writers. I joined a mastermind and I'm working on putting together a book proposal. I started writing. I put up a website so that I could have a place to put articles to encourage other widows. So my target audience is people who've lost someone from grief, especially widows. And I want to pass on this idea of try a legacy action. It might be something that would really help you move forward in your grief, give you a path, give you new purpose. And so if anyone is interested, they can go to my website and download. I have a free download on how you can think about a legacy action for your person.
And what is your site? Will you tell us that? And we'll link to that in the show notes.
Thank you. It's just jenniferehassel.com. And I'm on Instagram too. It's just at Jennifer E. Hassel. And I try to write things that are encouraging, or I try to write about struggles I've had. Recently, it's something that's been on my heart. And there's a word I learned. It's called decathecting. Isn't that a cool word? Detaching yourself emotionally from a person or thing in anticipation of losing it. So it's a great word for people who say, you know, your husband has cancer and you know he's not going to make it. Part of the anticipatory grief is something called decathecting, where you start to emotionally try to detach yourself. And that's what I'm doing with my house.
So is that one of your adventures for the year, is getting a new house and leaving the one that you were in when your husband was still here?
Well, no, the writing part is my, and you know what?
I think you should count both.
Well, sometimes it's an adventure, but sometimes it's just a challenge. Like one year I just decided, I am terrified of public speaking. I'm going to join Toastmasters and stand up in front of people and give a speech. I mean, that wasn't an adventure, but it was scary. And so for me, the idea is, what will push you, make you grow, try something new? But as I said, I think anybody could figure out what they want to do to honor and become more like their person.
Yes. One of my favorite quotes is, a good goal should scare you a little and excite you a lot.
Ooh, I'm writing that one down. Wait.
Yeah, I love that.
So do you have any goals in mind?
So it's so funny, while you've been talking, there's been something that's kind of been in the back of my head that I've thought about doing, but I'm going to think more about doing it.
Hmm.
And that is, Jason was a marathon swimmer, and so he would swim across lakes. And every summer there's a race called the Bear Lake Monster. And he did it, I think, four or five times. And I've often wondered, like, do I think I could do it? And part of me has wanted to do it kind of like in his honor and in his memory, but haven't taken it very seriously because it would be really hard for me. But I don't know. I might want to try it.
How far is the Bear Lake Monster?
It's like a 6.5 mile swim. So it would take me probably 4 hours to swim that far.
Oh, Anita, Mark did the same thing.
He was a crazy one of those.
Yes, he did. We had one. It's called the Great Chesapeake Bay Bridge Swim. And it's six. It's like that. You swim across the Chesapeake Bay in some unbelievable temperature, like, I don't know, 50 degrees. How cold is it in Bear Lake? Is it cold?
It's not very warm. Yeah. Yeah. But he used to joke. He'd say, I have bioprene, which meant fat, right? Not neoprene. That's gonna be with me now to think about.
So what is on the horizon for you in addition to your writing? Do you have any physical adventures coming up or any trips planned?
I actually do not. I think because of COVID and travel has been restricted, I do want to go skiing, and maybe there could be a widow ski trip.
Okay, we're officially inviting you to come and ski with us. This winter, it'll be very monumental because it's Anita's first season ever. You'll be coming out. Hey, Karen from Canada, come down. Wait, can Canadians come yet?
Anybody else, come join us.
I haven't skied in 2 years, so that
will
be
so fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, we definitely need a widow skiing. Hey, if any of you want to, drop us an email.
Let's
do
it.
We're here for it. Ski season usually ends the first week in April and starts mid-December, depending on the snow. So there's your time frame, everybody. Let us know. That would be so fun to see you, Jennifer, if you did make it out.
Thank you. I would love that. I would love that. No, I can't think of an adventure, but maybe one will come to me. I think writing and putting my words out there has been a little scary, but hopefully the idea is to benefit other people. Isn't that what we want to do? To turn around and say, you know, I've been on this journey now 14 years, and people like you are really, in my book, you're still just starting.
I was just going to ask if you've got maybe just some real quick tips that you could give to our listeners in considering what their adventure could be, how to find their own way to do what you're doing.
When I would suggest to someone else or talk to them, I would say, let's first find out about your person. What was it about? And I'll say him because it's easier, but it could be maybe it's a woman. Maybe it's your loved one had qualities that you admired. Start with those. Think about what they are. Maybe write down two or three. Was there something that they loved to do or something about who they were? Start with that. And then it's not like you have to mimic them, although you can. My thinking was I wanted to grow to become more like him in that way. I was not adventurous, so I wanted to become adventurous. Maybe they were someone who liked to learn new things. So how would you translate that yourself? So it might be an adventure, but it doesn't have to be. I only chose adventures because Mark was adventurous.
So it could even be something like if your person was a big reader and you're not a reader, it could be having a goal to read a book, just one book, and go from there.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So I think that we can learn from people we admire and people we love. And if it's something that we can pass on in the world too, although, you know, whether it's reading a book, but maybe it's reading a book to children. Maybe you volunteer in the community or in a daycare center. But if you can find a way to take that and make the world a better place, I think that gives purpose, not just for yourself. Plus, you also feel more accountable if you commit to doing something out in the world. I think we're only limited by our imaginations and how we want to remember and act on becoming more like the people we love.
In our text exchanges, you asked me about Jason. That was one of the things you wanted to know more about him. And it actually made me really stop and think about the things that he did or the way that he was that I would like to emulate too. And I think that's a really powerful exercise, is to think about your person, think about the qualities that you would like to take of theirs and assimilate into your own being, because all of our people had something that we loved about them, right? There was a reason that they were our people. And if we can stop and try and figure out what things we would like to take from them long term and make a part of ourselves, then they are still alive in a way.
Yes. And I hesitate to say it's just about adventures, because it really isn't. It's just that that's how my guy was. And one concern I had is if I told my story and I didn't make it accessible to other people, if it was just about, oh, this woman did trapeze school or she rode a motorcycle, I would never be like that. They can't use that. That doesn't help them. It only helps other people if it can inspire them to become more like their loved one, to take action in their loved one's memory. Then it becomes useful. Then it becomes helpful. Otherwise, it's just me telling my own story for no good reason.
Oh, man. Jennifer, thank you so much. I feel inspired after talking to you.
Thank you very much.
We hope everybody has enjoyed listening to Jennifer's story, and we hope you feel inspired to find a way to keep your loved one's memory and their essence alive through something, even if it's not adventuring. Think about that. And remember to check out the Widow Wives Club on Facebook. We would love to have you be a part of our community. If you want to keep the podcast going, check out patreon.com/WWDN.
If you'd like to buy us a taco, check out buymeacoffee.com/widowwedonow.
And if you want to give us a rating and review on iTunes, I won't say no to that. I will say yes. Until we talk to you again, I'm Anita.
I'm Mel.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're just two young widows and a widow trapeze veteran. And we're all trying to figure out
widow we do now. This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks, and so you don't have to pay extra for that, and you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan, and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.